You're listening to the Dermatology SOS podcast. I'm your host, Claire Darmody. And as always, I'm joined by your SOSers, experts, consultant dermatologists, Professor Katrina Ryan and Professor Nikki Ralph. Today, we're going to talk about acne. Hi, ladies.
Hi, Claire.
We decided this episode would be about acne and problem skin. And we'll be talking then about acne triggers, treatments, causes, who gets it, long-term effects and how it impacts self-esteem. Why did you want to talk about acne?
I suppose it's one of the commonest skin conditions and affects over 85% of teenagers. I mean, we've all had a spot or two, but also because it has a big psychological impact. And there's lots of old wives' tales out there, like, you know, people think that you'll grow out of your acne and, you know, that everyone gets it and because it's so common, it's okay. But it really does have a significant impact from, you know, teenagers dropping out of sport because if it affects their back and chest. They don't want to take off their top if they're doing swimming, for example. And so many people struggle with it for so long. So, you know, when you look at studies, you know, anywhere from 30 to 40% of women still struggle with regular breakouts into their 40s and to a lesser extent men. But because it has such long-term consequences of the scarring, and what we'd like to do is to tell people that there are treatments available to come sooner rather than trying to spend all of the money on trying to fix the scarring, which is never going to be as perfect as if you just didn't get it in the first place. I suppose it's also close to my own heart because I didn't suffer with the classic teenage acne that majority of people do, and I actually got it when I was pregnant. And unfortunately, during pregnancy, the treatments are quite limited, so I had to suffer through the pregnancy with acne and then treat it afterwards. But doing my treatment after has been like literally life-changing. It was incredibly uncomfortable. Trying to cover it up with makeup took me 30 minutes trying to take it off at night because I had really cystic jawline acne, really, really sore. And yeah, just to say to people that there are treatments available.
So it's obviously something that you commonly would have clients in about.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a huge part of our practice. And you know, it's I think it's an area dear to nearly all of our hearts. I think all of the consultants here, there's seven of us, all of us have needed Roaccutane treatment for our own acne. We've all taken it. So I think it's
so you've
nice.
All had acne.
So many of the population as well. I think that the statistic that Nikki, you know, just reminded us of, though, is something that so many people don't realise. Like 40% of adult women still struggling with adult hormonal acne. It's a huge amount. You know, it's something we consider a teenage problem. And there are so many women who struggle with it. And, you know, week after week, I have women arrive in with bucket loads of skincare products. Mm. You know, they throw all the stuff down. You know, they've spent thousands on their acne. You know, with all sorts of fancy skincare regimens. They've tried every treatment, laser, peels, whatever. They've literally spent thousands for something that's so easy to treat. Mm. You know, and seeing acne, of course, you know when anybody comes into me with acne, whether it be a teenager or an adult, you know, I don't like to see them have acne, but more importantly, it kills me when I see unnecessary acne scarring. Mm. So, you know, I think, you know, which is so preventable if we get there on time. So I think it's such a treatable condition, and it's a condition that causes such an impact on especially severe acne, on the lives of young people. You know, it's been shown to even change their career choices. You know, that impact at such a formative part of someone's life can really have a lifetime of a consequence. It can change, you know, the trajectory of their life in lots of ways. So I think it's something that is, you know, we don't take seriously enough sometimes.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I was going to actually ask you firstly what is classified as acne, but maybe we'll come back to that because you've said about not being taken seriously. Do you think people put off coming to see you guys because people minimise it for them, that they think it's just something you'll grow out of?
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of people say, you know, you have to try everything before you can go and see a dermatologist or even talk to your GP, so you have to try every over-the-counter product. But for some people, they start to scar quite quickly. Like, you know, you could be fine one day and all of a sudden, particularly in teenagers, it can develop quite quickly, whereas a lot of older women might describe the kind of the cyclical every month just before their period they get a flare. So you know, you shouldn't listen to all those old wives' tales out there. If you really feel that your acne is impacting on your quality of life and at the first sign of a scar, you really need to seek some, you know, medical help to discuss treatment.
So as it happens, my sister Jenny was seen by Katrina, and so I asked her this week, because I knew I was doing the podcast, if I could share her own experience of living with it, which she reminded me, by the way, I was the one who suggested she came to see you, which I had forgotten. And she's very grateful to both of us on that basis. But what was interesting was I remember her acne wasn't that bad, for want of a better word, in that I've seen people with acne a lot worse. But I remember at the time a family member or friend or a couple of people saying to me about her being put on treatment like Roaccutane. Like I didn't really know her acne was that bad. Like, I didn't really know she'd acne. A couple of those kind of comments that I felt probably well intentioned were definitely minimizing the concern that she had. And, you know, was it a bit over the top getting this treatment? That was the implication I felt. And she sent me a message saying that it was really important that I told her story, but also that she wanted to say that while the acne had had an impact on her self-esteem, the people saying that stuff had an even bigger impact. The people making her feel like she was, like, that it wasn't that bad really impacted her, so much so that when she came to see Katrina, she fully thought Katrina was going to say to her, you're not bad enough to have Roaccutane. And she was dreading being told she couldn't or didn't deserve the treatment to get rid of it, when Katrina actually said, and this was years ago, nobody should walk around feeling like that about their own skin. And I thought that's important for us to say to any listeners who maybe know someone in their life with acne, that, you know, the words that you say or minimizing the impact it has on you is not great. But she put off coming to someone expert to fix it for so long because she didn't think it was bad enough.
And I think that can happen often with all sorts of skin conditions, not just acne, even with psoriasis, other things. The thought of going on a medical treatment
for your skin.
Yeah. For vanity.
You should put up with vanity. Yeah.
And it isn't. It's a medical condition, in the same way as you wouldn't neglect other things that are, you know, are damaging to your health and whatnot as well. And actually, I think, you know, you're describing a group of patients that fall between the cracks, because the problem is they don't have severe...
Everyone's seen the pictures of that acne. Like,
Nikki said, old wives' tales, think people nearly think you need to have the pockmarks now, because they see scarred adults thinking... Yeah. You're not that bad. You're like, but they might be.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
So,
but we've looked at studies with social media, with life in general, showing that patients take social media blackouts. Like, they don't show up for a date. They don't show up for work. They don't show up for school. Like, it's a huge impact on all walks of life.
Days missed, and you know, a really good study done recently as well, showing such higher levels of depressive symptoms and suicidal ideation in people with acne, and that's acne of all types. And maybe it's because we are now so focused on our appearance because of all the pressures of social media and whatnot. But I definitely think it's gotten worse. It's made people more socially anxious as well. And the problem is with people who are, you know, bad in that they're getting, you know, even if it's a bad, if just one bad cyst a month, that's leaving one extra scar a month. That's important, because it's months over years add up, you know, and we see a lot of women with, you know, bad scarring in here, the type of scarring that Nikki has described in herself, that is very hard to get rid of once you already have them. And those patients instead are put on years and years of antibiotics, or more commonly now, they're on birth control for years and years and years, purely for their skin. You know, different if they need it anyway for the contraception, but they don't even like being on it. And they, you know, there's other ways to sort it out and have it gone for good. So I do feel that those men and women feel neglected. And often when they come to a dermatologist, you know, they are so relieved that they're finally going to get help.
And that someone's going to admit it's okay to be worried about
it. The majority of the thank you cards you actually get are from your patients who you treated for acne, because it's so life changing. What really upsets me is seeing women in their late 30s who've decided to come off the contraception that has been controlling their acne for the last 20 years because they want to try for a baby, and then all of a sudden, boom, their acne is really significant. And then you're saying, but now we need to give you treatment, and there really aren't any treatments that you can safely take for to try and conceive or for the duration of a pregnancy. So you're kind of having to push the pregnancy off a little bit, because then the hormones of pregnancy would potentially only make it worse. So a lot of people do have to do their treatment first. And like me, I didn't have teenage acne, and actually came with the onset, and within like 6 or 7 weeks of being pregnant, I literally exploded. And like, you know, not everyone wants to tell everyone that they're pregnant in the first few weeks, because unfortunately that's when the highest rate of loss is. So you're there trying to hide it for a while, but between the vomiting and the acne, and like most dermatologists should hope that they could have a good skincare routine and not have acne, and there I am, everyone knows that I'm pregnant straight away because of the acne everywhere. But it took its toll on me, I have to say. The only thing that I think got me through it was the fact that I was so excited to be having a baby.
And you knew there was a fix at the end of it.
Exactly. That's, and I knew that I was just going forever. To take it straight away.
So what makes it acne rather than a few pimples or bad skin? It's not always acne, is it?
It is. Yeah. So really? A lot of people say that, you know, I have people who come in because of their spots, and they say, but I don't have acne, and I mean, I don't know, it is acne. Yeah. Acne is, now there are very mild forms of acne when you just have a few blackheads, you know, more moderate when it's more pimples, you know, with white heads and little bumps, and then it gets, you know, then there's the more cystic acne. Mm. There's different degrees of it, but all of it it is
it's
acne.
A spectrum of the one
the,
thing.
The one thing that sometimes gets confused with it is the more inflammatory form of rosacea has pimples as well. And that's called acne rosacea. But apart from that, pimples are acne for the most part.
Okay. Yeah. Now, you both mentioned it is classically more, you know, younger. Is it more nearly always teenagers? Because I know women pregnant can have it. I know men in their adult age. But is it classically something that young
people
suffer? Well,
no, 40% of women who are in their 30s have it.
Oh, you said that already.
Yeah.
Okay.
Less men. So it's around 20, 25% of men at that point are still getting some form of acne.
What are the percentage of young people who have it? Teenagers who have it?
Oh, 80%.
Okay. 80%. So it is very
but
prevalent.
But a lot of them will be mild. Yeah. So they don't all need treatment. You know, they may be able to do a proper skincare routine and maybe one topical therapy. Going
and
to
they
at
might
night.
Actually grow out of it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. The majority do, you know, but what we don't want to, you don't want to miss the boat in the ones that are actually having more of an impact on their life and scarring that you're saying you will grow out of it because they won't all grow out of it.
And I think this is where some of the, as you say, you know, what takes people so long to come, a lot of them are just hoping and hoping and hoping it's just going to go away.
Yeah,
you know, because they've been told
which
eventually they'll grow out of
it, isn't it? And might not even have the result you want at the end.
But as Katrina said, the amount of money that's spent on skincare by the time they get you, do you know that kind of way? It's phenomenal. And a lot of, you know, kind of chopping and changing products, and your skin doesn't really like that.
Like make it worse.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've seen a lot of that actually, even in the last kind of year and a half, like Acne Cosmetica, where people have had time to go on TikTok and Instagram and looking at these complicated skincare routines where people are putting 10 things on in the morning, 10 things on at night, and all of a sudden, like, getting breakouts. So, yeah, just like skincare is great for some people. And if it's very, very mild, it can control it with your combination of your alpha hydroxy acids and your beta hydroxy acids. But if it's starting to scar you or getting you down, you really need to seek help.
What are the causes of acne? What causes it?
Well, I mean, there's a genetic predisposition. So often you'll talk about family members and, you know, maybe a sibling or a parent has had acne before. And really the primary lesion of acne is your comedone, which is your blackhead, essentially. So this is a buildup of your dead skin cells with the sticky oil that's been produced by your sebaceous gland or your oil gland. And that really kicks in at your teenage years. But really seeing a lot younger, like even 10, 11, 12 in the last while, where when your hormones are starting to kick in, then all of a sudden your oil levels are going up and then you start to create blackheads. And then you get the inflammatory lesions where the bacteria come in and they get into your pores and you either get the pus bump, like your yellow kind of spot, or your red spot, which is your papule. So people can have just kind of blackhead type of acne and they don't have a lot of inflammation. So some people, you know, that's where they think they don't have acne, but they have lots of this sensation of feeling tiny bumps under the skin.
And will that scar, those little tiny bumps?
Yes, they can. Absolutely. Yeah. So
especially deep blackheads, they can make what we call ice pick scars. So sort of little,
like a cocktail stick where you kind of as if you just stuck it into the cheeks. So, you know, that is primarily what acne is. But then, as Katrina was saying earlier, that some adult females in particular would come in saying, I have acne, but actually they have rosacea, where rosacea is more predominantly a central facial problem. So both your cheeks, your nose, kind of center of your forehead and chin. It can be the entire face, but that would be primarily it. But the difference being is that rosacea doesn't scar and it doesn't have blackheads. And there are a few people that have an overlap between both. So if they're using all the over-the-counter products, they may be thinking they have acne and using all of the acids and kind of drying out their skin, and then it's actually flaring their rosacea because they had rosacea in the first place. So rosacea is actually more sensitive skin, so it's all about recreating the barrier and using the proper moisturizers and your sunscreen. So it can be quite difficult, unfortunately, for some people to tell.
And there's so much information out there, Claire. Even as dermatologists, for us to go through, and I'm talking about the over-the-counter stuff, to work out, you know, what is in things and whatnot, and young people and I was going to say, you know, women, but also men, are just being bombarded with all of this information and they don't know what to use, and often they make the problems worse.
And I think as well, now that I've realised that acne is so common in some people and there's so many varying levels, you can see how you're not thinking dermatologist and proper medical consultant professional. You're more thinking the chemist, or, and then there's all those tele shopping things that promise all these things, these beautiful people who had problem skin and then it's gone.
Yeah, well, a lot of celebrities have, you know, been paid to advertise certain products and then they've, you know, done a whole skincare range. But unfortunately for some people, it just doesn't work. If their acne is, you know, moderate to severe, it's not going to work.
So some of those things can make it worse. Are there other things that trigger acne?
So there certainly are. You know, there's a huge amount of people talking about.
And not to blame people on it, by the way, when I say that, I just mean, is there things that trigger it?
Oh, yeah, it's not anyone's fault, exactly.
It's never anyone's fault. And it's not, you know, so many mums drag in their sons and say, he's not washing his face. And obviously,
and he's drinking too much of this and eating pizza all day.
I know.
That's right.
Just his hormones. You know, this is something you'd have anyway. So, no, it's not anything anyone's doing wrong. There is very, you know, mild mild evidence with regards to diets that are very, you know, in particular skim milk, a lot of skim milk. There's so many people talk about diet and acne. It's all to do with my diet. It's very little to do with your diet. There's certain things that can make it a little bit worse. Don't cause it, but exacerbate it when you already have the acne. And that would be, skim milk, actually more than full fat milk for whatever
That's
reason.
That's so interesting.
Then it's to do with the hormonal content of it, actually driving the hormones. And then high glycemic load foods, which really just means junk sweets food. And chocolate. Yeah.
So because everything in moderation, though, because we're not saying, like, cause everyone's convinced if I just took that out of my diet, I'd have no acne, but it might just trigger more flares. But if you have still moderate to severe acne, changing your diet's not suddenly going
to make it. So it's not a myth to say that junk food and sugary food can be bad for your skin, but it's a bit of a one size fits
yes.
all.
And it's not that it gave you acne. It's that when you already have acne, you might have a little bit of a flare.
It's a trigger rather than a cause.
And really, we don't see, like, you know, so many people drinking like 5 liters of milk a day, but sometimes the teenage boys, particularly teenage boys who play rugby, and I think there
knocking
are some
back
studies
liters.
No, but I think there are some studies showing that skim milk rehydrates you better than water. So
I was going to ask why teenage boys would be drinking skim milk. I think there were some things years ago about that,
but they are probably the only group that would drink like liters and liters of milk. So it's not that you have to tell them to stop, but just tone it down a little bit.
Does stress trigger it? Do you see kids with exams and stuff having it worse?
Stress triggers every skin condition. The skin is like the window onto the soul.
It's very hard to fix that, isn't it?
It is. But I think recognising it, and actually what's been interesting about the last couple of years with COVID and whatnot is, so many patients come in with a flare of their usually rosacea, psoriasis, eczema, whatnot, hives, and I explained it's probably the stress of COVID is probably, and I actually think, I'm coping with it well and blah, blah, blah. But they're homeschooling and they're doing this and they're doing that. They're coping. But you internalise your pressure.
I think how we identify stress, we don't. I love stress. I work well under pressure. I've got it all covered. And you're like, well, your body doesn't think that because your body is either having a flare of your IBD or your psoriasis or everything, or you're not sleeping, and we don't recognise it. Yeah. And that's why I think it's hard to manage because I think we want to be, if you're not busy, there's something wrong with you. Like if your job is easy, that's terrible. So we don't identify it. And if you don't identify it, you can't treat it.
And our skin tells us sometimes. It's so important as a doctor to take that holistic approach as well. And certainly with certain type of skin conditions, you already know something's gone wrong in your patient's life before they sit down when they have a flare.
Really?
Yeah. It's a really interesting
thing. Because they could have been doing fine for so long, and then you can say that.
Turns out their marriage is breaking up.
Or bereavement, or some sort of trauma.
It sends up your cortisol levels, which feed into acne and whatnot. But also, the impact of your psychological state impacts your immune responses, your inflammatory responses in lots of ways. So
and the bit that you can see is the skin. Mm-hmm. And it could be doing all sorts of things, but you're going to see it on your skin. So I'm still talking about the young people, but like, so exam stress, worry at home, being bullied, anxiety, looking at the Instagram the whole time. Mm-hmm. And then in adults, it could just be that you're busy, you're running around, you're stressed about COVID. They're going to be triggers. Can you do anything about it though?
Absolutely.
You mean you're stressed?
Yes.
Well, I mean, obviously, I think like exercise is my go-to, that kind of way. But I do see some of my patients, because their acne is so bad, they've stopped exercising because, as I said, you've had teenagers that were doing like really high level of sport and all of a sudden develop really bad back and chest acne and then just opt out. Like, that's changing their whole trajectory of their life. They could have been professional athletes and then they stop. And if they don't seek help, then, their years are trying to grow out of their acne. But I mean, obviously, you can do cognitive behavior therapy if you're, really, really stressed.
But if you think a bit of extra sleep or exercise, a bit of me time, those things will help.
Yeah. I always chat to my patients about that as well. Just say, like, this could be a sign you need to just take a step back.
Take some time, and that's
what I'll say to them. And the step back is different for all of us. I used to advise my patients to go to mindfulness, do mindful meditation until
I'd
I tried
be useless
it
at that. I tried to, I'm useless, I talked to myself
and I wasn't aimed for it at all.
If you're a go-go-go kind of person, you actually just can't stop. So exercise for me is...
It's interesting because you've just given me an insight into another part of your jobs, that actually when someone sits down in whatever their skin flare-up is, and be it acne, you can sort of say, well, I need to say, has everything been okay? Has anything changed? And you're not going to really advise on that, but you're going to say, that's probably why this is flared.
And it actually gives them insight sometimes, into their lives. It can be that wake-up call. Actually,
I think that's for
doctors, that's part of all of our lives. You have to treat the whole person and not just the condition you see in front of you.
Okay, so we've mentioned a couple of times now, but the main thing really is other than stress and all the other triggers, what's the treatment for acne? Or what are the treatments for acne?
So I suppose it depends on the severity. So obviously, if you're starting off with mild acne, it's a proper skincare routine so that the person is washing their face every day and choosing a suitable product for that. So, you know, everyone's kind of obsessed with drying out the skin when they have acne, but sometimes that actually makes it worse. You dry it out too much, your oil glands are kind of stimulated to produce more oil. So some people are better, particularly I find some of my adult patients, adult females, they don't do as well with the same astringent products. They may need more of a cream-based cleanser rather than a foaming or gel cleanser, whereas the teenagers with have loads of oil, they sometimes do better with the foaming or gel cleanser. So it is important to make sure you take your makeup off every night and moisturize your skin, recreate that barrier. I think that's been a huge issue for patients in the last year and a half, particularly like the onset of maskne. So people could have been doing fine for ages and all of a sudden are getting breakouts, particularly on, you know, the lower cheeks, the lower jawline. So a clean mask every single day, washing your face and moisturizing, because the humidity behind the mask is obviously the perfect environment for bacteria to thrive, and then the friction of the mask is stimulating your oil glands. So again, makeup brushes, that's a simple tip, but not leaving your makeup brushes in the bottom of your bag for months on end and putting the bacteria all over your face. So washing your makeup brushes every week.
They're all tips for people even without acne, actually.
We
all should be keeping cleaner makeup
stuff,
brushes.
But when you're busy, you're
and on your night out, you know, put them into, there's these cool little bags called brush bags.
Oh yeah.
You put into your makeup bag so that your brush always has a protector in it. It's not swimming around in the rest of the dirt and the dust and everything else in your bag, and then you paint it onto your face. You know, these
things. Okay, so just for good skincare.
Yeah, and if you've got, if you're like, if you have a teenager who has mild acne, of course, you can start with the over-the-counter topical therapies. But then if it's a little bit worse and that hasn't responded over a couple of months, and saying that now, this is a teenager who's not scarring, so they just have mild spots, which is technically acne. Then if that's not working, go and see your GP. They may put you on a combination of oral antibiotics with your topical therapies. And sometimes we use retinoids at that point. So we're trying to reduce the oil level, take away those dead skin cells off the surface. Obviously, females have a few more options, because obviously if it's mild, you can use hormonal therapies. So you can use either combined contraceptive pill, or you can use a medication called spironolactone, which is basically working on your testosterone, so stop stimulating the oil glands again. But again, they're more kind of longer term solutions. It's not a treatment that you take for a month and then you have clear skin and you give it up. It's something that you'd be on for months to years. And then if you've any scarring at all, or of course, if you have failure of all of those other treatments, then you would consider isotretinoin, which is the proper name for Roaccutane, which is a vitamin A based medication.
So before you explain about Roaccutane, which I know is the game changer, certainly my sister used and other people I know have used, you guys have mentioned scarring quite a bit in the early stages. You can even see scarring in early stages. I always thought that teenagers have bad acne and then they don't see scarring until they're in their 20s or something.
No, God, no.
It happens, you know,
nearly straight away.
It's the way the inflammatory area then resolves, laying down collagen, but in into a scar. So the scar can dip into the skin, or it can, you know, lump out of the skin. But that can happen within, you know, I've had some, especially lately, I've had three young boys in the last, I'd say, 2 months, 14, incredibly inflammatory acne, and already in the month or two before they got to me, and this is only broken out in the last 6 months, they have devastating scarring. You know,
so, and it's not that it's anyone's fault, and it's not that anyone did anything wrong. It can just happen that quickly.
So of course it's not anyone's fault, but that's a myth, but maybe I'm not the only one who thinks that the idea is you have bad spots when you're a teenager, and then later on, because you didn't do anything, there's little bits of scarring that come up. But they, so people can spot that pretty quickly.
Oh yeah, at the time
as soon as you start seeing scarring is when it's time to get a bit more help than over the counter stuff, be it your GP or your dermatologist. So Roaccutane is what you mentioned, Nikki, and I know you both said you've been on that in the past for your acne, and as I said, my sister has, and I know lots of people who've been on it. What is it and how does it work?
So it's a vitamin A based drug, because a lot of people, like, I don't want to take hormones, I don't want to take antibiotics, so it's not, because they may have tried all of those other treatments before. And what it's basically doing is it's kind of an all-encompassing treatment for your acne, as opposed to targeting just on the surface or just deeper. So it's basically trying to shrink down those oil glands, stopping them producing that excessive amount of oil. It also can stimulate some new collagen formation, so it's trying to prevent further scar formation, and can remodel over time. And even when you come off Roaccutane, for the months after Roaccutane, you can still help to improve. Now, I don't mean the really, really deep scars, but some of the more superficial scars can help to be improved after you come off treatment. It's also reducing bacteria on the skin surface. So it's kind of all treatments in one go in a tablet form. It's kind of like a gel-like capsule. It's very easy to take, like, it's very easy to swallow. swallows, because obviously a lot of teenagers might be taking it and they may be new to taking tablets and they've never had to take tablets regularly, so
they won't even wash their face, some of them, according to their mothers.
It's a fairly easy tablet to take. It's relatively small, actually, and it's all about kind of body weight, so there's no set way to do it for each person. It depends on where you are in life, it depends on what your job is. I mean, when I took it, I actually only took 20 milligrams, which would be deemed kind of low dose Roaccutane, because I talk all day for a living, I was working hard, and I just found the dryness of my lips. I tried to push to a higher dose and it just didn't suit me for dryness, so I stayed on Roaccutane for a lot longer than the average kind of 6 or 7 months. I was on it like nearly a year at lower dose, because we're trying to get you to a cumulative amount for your body weight. And like, we do different things. Well, I do anyway during leave insert year, because, you know, some people get a bit of fatigue with it, so that's a really important year. So you might, I don't know if you treat lower doses, or even coming up to the exams and stuff, you might lower down the dose. You can get a little bit of muscle aches and pains in some of the really sporty people. So often, you know, I've had a few patients represent Ireland in the Olympics and stuff like that. So you kind of lower the dose right down at the time that they're coming up for big events and things like that. There's no set way to do it for each person.
It's a tailor's treatment.
Absolutely. And like, don't compare yourself to your brother or your sister who took it. Like, you'd be different body weights. You might have different skin color, in the sense of darker skinned patients tolerate it a bit better. Also, if you had eczema as a child, because it causes some dryness, you can get a little bit of dermatitis while you're on it, so you might have to tweak the dose if somebody's too dry, if they're getting patches in other places. But as much as it had, they're all very manageable side effects, and the outcome of it is just such, it's fantastic. Like, as I said, for me, it's life changing. Not trying to take 30 minutes in the morning trying to conceal it all up, and then another 30 minutes a night with the pain trying to rub off all my makeup. So yes, there are very common side effects, and the common ones being the dryness. So sometimes dry lips, dry nose. For some people, dry eyes, they may have to use eye drops. The muscle aches and pain, certainly more in my teenage patients. And there are certain things you're not allowed to do. So you have to be careful in the sun, but the antibiotics make you sun sensitive. And if you're using topical retinoids on your face, they also make you sun sensitive. And you're not supposed to drink copious amounts of alcohol on it, because it is broken down by your liver. But again, so are antibiotics broken down by your liver, and they come with potential side effects too. So I think if you go to your doctor, you sit down, you have a proper consultation, the side effects are explained to you. I give all my patients a full list of the products that they should be using on their face, how they should cleanse it, how they should moisturize it, the names of different brands that would suit them. We do monitor bloods. So normally in my patients, it's one set before treatment and roughly another set by week 8 as I'm increasing the dose. And if they're fine, they don't need to keep having, you know, regular blood tests. But I think one of the things is the whole kind of taboo around pregnancy and Roaccutane. And there's, you know, a lot of that out there in the media. So it is really important that if a woman of childbearing years is taking it, that they have to take every precaution not to become pregnant. So that's really important.
So the other thing around it, I think, if it's okay to mention, is there was, it did have a bad brand. Now, this is a number of years ago, because a good friend of mine, who, again, like, for my sister and for this particular girl I'm thinking of, it was like a life and a game changer, and she would swear by it. But it did have a bad name. This, we're talking probably 15 years ago, I'm thinking of maybe even longer. This kind of black box warning or whatever. And I wonder if there's still a little bit of concern that it's this very serious drug to take. What happened there?
It still does have that name. And the thing is, Clary can very occasionally cause low mood. Now, it's very occasional. So in my career, I've seen it happen 3 times ever. And I've treated thousands of people in the US and in Ireland at this stage. And a lot of them have suffered from depression or anxiety before being on it, sometimes partly due to their acne. You know, and those patients are often, you know, seen by the psychiatrist first, and only once ever has a psychiatrist said no to going ahead with Roaccutane. So it can happen. It's incredibly rare. When they do the big studies, so big database studies, the big meta-analysis studies, looking at patients on Roaccutane versus patients on antibiotics, they see no increase in depression in the Roaccutane patients at all. They actually show an improvement in depressive symptoms in the Roaccutane treated patients versus the other. And that's probably because their skin is improving and they're feeling more confident. And that's what we see every day in our clinics. I see teenagers who come in to me who won't make eye contact on our first visit.
Or even pulling
their hair down and big fringes and whatnot as well. And different teenagers emerge at the end, you know, like literally, and their parents. And as Nikki said, you know, all of my thank you cards, I'd say, bar a few, are all from Roaccutane patients or their parents, because it's transformative in the way it improves their confidence. you know, their, you know, their interactions, you know, how social they are and whatnot as well. So, yes, it can happen. And we counsel everyone about that, that this could happen.
When you say this could happen, it is the idea that it could lead to depression and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So, just because I just said black box, but I that's mean, what
it's,
that means.
It's around since the 1980s, you know, that kind of
that's what I'm really asking,
the,
yeah.
Some of the old studies, they weren't done very well. And I suppose, unfortunately, the commonest age for people to present sometimes with mental health problems, particularly with boys and, you know, suicidal ideation, things like that, is age 18 to 25, which is often the time where you might be dealing with acne.
And especially so, people who've had a lifetime of severe acne, because they were the people who were treated back then. So they often had self-image problems and were socially isolated in some ways as well, you know, because of how severe their skin had been. But it can happen. People can feel it. It's incredibly rare. And we tell all of our patients that if your mood changes out of the norm for you, we can all have bad moods, obviously, especially teenagers. 14-year-olds and 15-year-olds will have bad moods. But if your mood changes out of the way for you, you stop taking the medication, talk to us immediately. And, you know, the drug has a half-life of 22 hours. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's out of your system within a couple of days. But, you know, we counsel everyone about that. Now, we counsel our patients even more heavily about not getting pregnant because vitamin A is toxic to the fetus. So it's so important that if somebody is on it, that they have two forms of birth control if they're sexually active and that they don't try and become pregnant for a month afterwards. And after a month of coming off it, you can find it
doesn't affect fertility at all, because sometimes when you tell people, like, oh, you can't become pregnant, they think, well, what if it's 10
years? It's nothing to do with fertility. Just don't get pregnant while you're on it.
Men can father children, but you can't donate blood because if the blood is given to a pregnant woman. So that's the only thing.
Okay. I just wanted to clear that up because I think it's worth mentioning there might be parents out there who their children are thinking about going on it, or their young people are, and that's their concern. But I think we've squared that
off.
And
Claire, I think it's such a valid concern as well, because, you know, these are parents who are bringing in their child. I see it. We see it every day. Mm. Parents who only want the best for their child.
Of course.
And they're so scared that, you know, that their child will become depressed because they used to hear all of the bad press that came around Accutane back then. And you've no idea how many of them, you know, the only regret they usually have is that they didn't do it sooner. And they say that over and over again. I shouldn't have left the scarring get so bad.
A few children, they might have said, I left him too long. I should have brought him sooner. Do you know that kind of way that the oldest child might not have got it and then the other two got it?
Yeah, I mean, like, just in relation to the psychological impact on having acne rather than any concern around the drug, like, I was a friend of mine I met at the weekend, and she was telling me about her. I was telling her we were doing the podcast, and her niece or her cousin's daughter or whatever, I think, beautiful girl, stunner actually, and she said that she had such bad acne that not only, because you mentioned earlier, Nikki, about the pain, which is something I never really thought about, that she had such bad acne on her back and her bum that she couldn't even sit down because, like, and like the pus, like, they were actually like,
you can't even have a school bag on your back, like, it'll burst open.
And
some
she
of the
is on a Accutane and it is a life changer. But she's wearing this beautiful, she's tiny little thing, and she's wearing this beautiful backless floor length pink and red dress. And she just said she would never have worn that because she just couldn't, obviously. But then, like, you can see that her whole, she's like 18 and you're just like, she's beautiful and, you know, her life is starting. And then this thing has just been holding her back. And I thought, like, that's, you know, for her. And then another friend of mine who I mentioned earlier that was on years ago, she was on holidays, I think, on her own, and she was really, really down about her skin, and it was really bad. And she's walking on the beach, and this stuck with me for years. This little kid walked by, and she said, like, that girl's face looks like a pizza. And the parent looked as mortified, I think, as my friend, because the parent didn't know what to say, and she just put the head down. And, like, they're the sort of things that happen on a day-to-day basis for people that are living with something. So the pain and the embarrassment and what people say, and to me, they're all things that will impact your self-esteem so much more.
Yeah. Especially at such an important part of your life, at a time that you're becoming yourself, you know, your identity, you're meeting people, you're working out what you want to do, you know, as a career, all of these sort of things. So I think people underestimate the impact it can have, you know. It's your face. It's your face. It's what you can't hide the world every day. Yeah. You know.
And actually, then guys really can't hide it, because at least I know men can wear makeup now, but
they
don't.
Tend not to,
so it is a bit harder, is it? And there is, I think we have, and we'll talk about this when we talk about the men, but there is kind of a stigma of men being vain. It's sort of less accepted. Like, and vain is such a terrible word to use. Yeah. But it's almost, our boys
they
are
can't
short,
talk about
they're
their
not
appearance.
As quick to come for help. They can't talk about their appearance. Just put up with it.
And they often get more severe nodular cystic acne, particularly on their back and chest, you know, so they're kind of hiding it for a long time.
Yeah.
And a lot of people with chronic skin disease, whether it's, you know, eczema or psoriasis, or you kind of, so, you know, well, you just have to live with it, or you just have to cover it up or
put
dress
up with
a certain way. Like, you know, a lot of patients are like, I'll never wear black, for example, if I have psoriasis, because the flakes will be coming out. You know, so changing your whole life for your skin, whereas really it should be the other way around.
And sometimes they don't realise how much they're changing their whole life.
Yeah, because we do in dermatology, we have this quality of life index where we often ask our patients to fill it out if they've, you know, for psoriasis, for example, and I do for my acne patients, showing how much of an impact it has on the type of clothes they wear, you know, the events that they go to, how long it takes them to
have
get ready in the day.
Have they just normalised that, and that's why they don't see there's an impact?
So, you know, we'll see it with
they're
psoriasis
putting up
all
with
the time
it.
As well. You know, they'll you know, there's some patients, it's happened, I'd say, at least 9 or 10 times that patients have come in with a T-shirt and they said, I wanted to come in this T-shirt today because this is the first time I've worn a T-shirt in 20 years. Like, it isn't, T-shirts are not in their wardrobe because they've learned that they'll always have psoriasis
covered up,
on their elbows and their arms. So they just always covered it. Their life adapted around it. And it's not until sometimes a disease is gone that, or you know, treated, that then they go, oh my God, you know, it impacted me so much. And
I'd
never brought
help.
My kids to the pool because, you know, my wife always did that because I was too embarrassed to get in. But they've created their life around it. So yeah, you know,
sad,
sometimes
isn't it?
Oh, it's really, really sad. And that's why our job is so gratifying, I think, because you really, you know,
life changing.
Yeah, your patients are so grateful. They really are.
So when it does happen for like you, Nikki, and you've gone the whole with perfect skin and then pregnant and bam, it comes along. Does it happen? Can it come on later in life for men, or is that just women? Is it a hormonal thing? Like, if you don't have it in your teenage years, for example, is it, can it come on in adulthood for men and women, or is it mostly women?
Not really. Like,
no, it's typically a female. It's typically a female thing. Yeah. It's very hormonally
men
driven.
Men might grumble, do you know what I mean, for decades and, you know, intimate, but I don't.
Doesn't come on for the first time in adulthood, but can it last for men in adulthood?
For a long time.
If it's not treated.
Yeah. If it's not treated. Yeah. So that it's more that men have continued to have the same acne into their adulthood and they never had it fully treated, or you know, they've maybe even had a course of Roaccutane and it came back a couple of years later. Roaccutane, you know, clears everyone initially, but you know, in 30% of patients they can have it come back again and they may need a second course. So there's a few men like that, but for the most part they don't develop it de novo in adulthood like women.
Not like
do.
Women like during a pregnancy, or you know, change of coming off the contraceptive, like change of hormones, things
so,
like that.
So if you haven't had it when you're younger, it can be quite common in women. When they're, it can not quite common, it happens for the first time in older life for women, but not for men. With men and women it can go on though.
Exactly.
Roaccutane is always a fix, but not always a permanent fix.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's say, for example, my sister or one of my friends, they're totally clear now and then they decide to get pregnant. Are they more likely to develop pregnancy acne if they've had acne when they're younger, or less likely to get it badly because they've used Roaccutane? How does that work?
I suppose they still can. The hormones trying to stimulate the sweat glands. For the majority of people, that one course will work.
Okay.
But for some, it doesn't. So I suppose what I do anyway with most of my patients after Roaccutane is that I would maintain them on a topical retinoid. So it's not that you suddenly start putting oils on your face after you've done Roaccutane. And, you know, you still have to treat your skin as being acne-prone skin. So you still have to choose your products wisely, making sure that your makeup, your sunscreen, your moisturizers are non-comedogenic or non-blackhead-forming.
But I bet you people are really compliant to that, because I mean, I had adult braces and then I take really good care of my teeth. If you've invested in your skin,
of course,
you always
take care.
A course of
Roaccutane is long enough, like 6-7 months at least, and you know, your regular checkups, and you invested an awful lot in it, and you probably, as I said, spent a fortune before on all the skincare products.
Yeah.
So advising someone to use a topical retinoid afterwards, that's probably the easy part. They're going to comply with this because they're so happy with how their skin looks and how smooth it is. The texture is so much better. The pore size is gone down, that they are going to comply with their topical retinoid.
Okay. And so generally the treatment, one course works, I think you said, and it can take anywhere from a couple of months to a year, depending on how high you go. Like,
well, the average is probably
wise.
Around
six,
six
to eight months.
Months.
6 to 8 months, and then some people need longer.
Yeah,
especially if
you have don't
to
just
go
stop.
Lower.
Yeah, so you don't just hit 6 months and say, okay, you're ready to finish now. You're looking at the person. You want their skin to be clear for at least 1 month. But to be honest, some of the latest studies are saying probably even 2 months. And particularly if you're doing a second course of Roaccutane, you want them to be clear for at least 2 months before you're ready to stop.
And how successful are the results considered? Like, can you give in general? Is there anyone that doesn't work on? Does it always
80%
work?
80% will be kind of...
So it pretty much works in everyone. You know, I'd say 98% of people get clear by the end of...
But somewhere between 20 and 30
until they
come
stop.
Back.
But about for about 70% of people, that is, you know, a permanent fix, if you like. And about 30% of people, their acne will come back, usually at a milder level, but will require a second course. Yeah. Most of those
but
people
it always
want
works. Roaccutane always works.
Yeah, pretty it's not you can't take second course or a third course, yeah. Because there was some old wives' tale saying you can only take it once, and that's obviously not true.
So we touched a good bit on this, but we probably need to talk about it a little bit more. The side effects of leaving acne untreated is scarring. Mm-hmm. And obviously the ones you're seeing in young boys is terribly scary. But like we probably all know people in our lives who are in their 30s and 40s and 50s who didn't have a Roaccutane or know about it or have any treatment. Like, that's the major issue there. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you can do about that scarring?
Laser treatment is the most effective nearly always. There's certain different types of scars. You know, most of the scars dent in, and treatments like resurfacing lasers, and they work by almost like the pixels on on a digital camera, that they punch. It makes little areas of trauma in tiny little pixelated areas, so that when the skin heals, it heals flat. Microneedling is very similar. It's using tiny microneedles to punch little like microtrauma holes, so the collagen again heals the area flat. So there, for the atrophic scars, the dippy scars,
the little pockmarks, is that the word you described them?
Are probably the
most
effective.
They're quite disfiguring looking, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And particularly, when you look at someone, you're looking as if you've got blinkers on. It's the centre of your face.
Well, I think you always know someone who had acne when they were younger if they have very bad scarring. And absolutely. then they no longer have the spots, but they now have the...
No, but some men would like choose to always have facial hair then. You know, that kind of way, and they just keep the beard.
A lot of men
forever.
Who have beards is because of that.
Really?
Yeah. To disguise it more. And like men, I do think, have it much harder because they can't wear the makeup and the other things that will conceal or detract from that. So we have they're the main modalities for the lumpy scars. And we see this often in black skin, that people will make lumpy scars where the spots were. We can inject steroids in.
Yeah, so they're hypertrophic or keloid
which
scars.
Which can kind of look like big spots in a way.
Yeah. And so we inject
and uncomfortable, like, and they can be itchy something. And, you know.
Oh,
and, yeah.
Wow. That can be
so
last
common
forever.
Places like the front of your chest and your kind of upper back and shoulders.
I have a lot of younger men will actually get those lumpy scars in their upper back as well, and women sometimes. So there's the lumpy scars as well, and the ice pick scars. Sometimes we use the ice pick ones are the tiny hatchet like ones. They're like a little ice pick was used. They're skinny and long into the, and they're often from the bad thick blackheads. And we can use something called TCA, a liquid that sort of congeals it all up together again in those. And sometimes, he was talking about it a couple of episodes ago, the dermal fillers can be used to help plump out the volume underneath it to make the scars
more flat. So Nikki mentioned in the first episode about that she got them, that you never know looking at you at all that you'd have acne. Nothing, you'd never see that.
I can still see in the mirror every day.
Isn't that interesting that I can't see it at all? But what I mean is those treatments that you're talking about can be very successful in removing scars.
And you've used resurfacing and filler.
I've only done two and I need to complete my course, but that's just due to lack of time. But a combination of the two. But some people just need the resurfacing laser.
So it's kind of never too late to treat acne. It's just that spots part of it's gone, there's probably another course of treatment for you.
Yeah. Mm. If you want to address the scarring, and for some people we get in there in time, there's very little scarring there, or the scars don't bother some, people. But often, I think the vast majority of people do want to when they've finally gotten their skin clear, they want the scarring cleared as well if they have bad scarring.
So would you get people maybe in their 30s or 40s in getting Roaccutane and then afterwards getting laser?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
So they're still getting full... I know people get it when they're pregnant and whatever, but the thoughts of people getting acne is such a young thing to get at 40 or...
Well, actually, it's 50. Usually not when they're pregnant. Nikki was unlucky, and some people can get a little flare during their pregnancy, but most of them are women just who aren't pregnant, who aren't on birth control.
40s, yeah.
I think that you know...
And like they have been having that for 20 years, 30 years.
Yeah, the usual onset is in mid-20s or so. And these are often, when people who have never had acne before in their lives, and then all of a sudden they're like, I had perfect skin until now, I'm in my 20s and I'm starting to get wrinkles and I'm getting pimples, so it can be really frustrating. And especially if they keep getting fobbed off, and it's those young women in their 20s that are spending the thousands and thousands on fancy skincare systems.
I was going to ask about that. You've mentioned that a couple of times. some over-the-counter stuff, as you said, if you have mild acne, that's properly targeted towards that. And maybe, like, I still make my doctor give me Zinaret when I'm going in for a prescription. It probably doesn't work. And they're like, you don't have any spots. I'm like, whatever. Someone, like, gave it to me years ago and I just keep getting
that's
the prescription
about as much
filled.
As we can use during pregnancy, but yeah.
And it's like this time, they're just looking at me. I'm like, looking at you to think, and probably doesn't work. But anyway, I've convinced myself it works for the odd spot. But is there, like, are you, how do you feel about the stuff that is sold by beauticians or beauty clinics that is, like, the thousands of euro? Because when you're saying people come with 1,000 euro worth of skincare, that's not what you're talking
no,
about.
No, it depends on the ingredients, but, like, you know, salicylic acid is good for acne, like beta hydroxy acids, alpha hydroxy acids, they all have their role, but it's, you know, to maintain clear skin for those people who just get the odd spot, very, very mild. But if you've got moderate to severe acne, there isn't
wasting
a product
your time
over
and
the
money.
Count, you know,
it's a medical condition. Yeah. You know, if somebody
so
has
kind of lies
acne.
Out there. There are people telling you that something's going to fix it that
and,
isn't.
And actually, sometimes these acne skincare regimens and systems
make it worse.
Create much more inflammatory acne. You know, it sort of tips somebody into a very bad flare.
Then they might keep using it more, and it just is in a vicious circle.
Yeah, they arrive
cycle.
Into us, and it, you know.
In a very once they're in a very inflammatory state, I mean, sometimes we have to use oral steroids before we can actually give Roaccutane. If somebody has suddenly, like, you know, hundreds of spots that are really inflamed, because then if you give them the Roaccutane, it can cause more of the blackheads to come out all of a sudden. So you have to calm it down first before you can even introduce it. So some people come in a very kind of bad
what
state.
What do steroids do for it?
Reduce inflammation, so kind of stop.
To really prevent
it's very
scarring.
Angry looking.
Yeah, and we're afraid that
looking.
It's going to cause really
and there
bad
can
scarring.
Be in a lot of pain as well. You know what I mean? So it'll have.
Is there commonly pain with acne?
Usually only in the very severe
severe
types.
Nodular cystic types more so yeah
and that's where something you'd need something like Roaccutane
mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah
and okay and here's one like should anyone ever squeeze a spot
no
it's very hard for people not to when they look with those I know it sounds gross but those ones that have the pus on them or they look and they want to get rid of that kind of gunky look.
Yeah, it's just that
I'm
you're
sure what people
spilling
want to do.
The contents of the spot,
and
which is all
it.
The dead skin cells and the bacteria to the surrounding skin, and you probably just get a few more spots a few days later. But it's just if people really dig in with their nails,
you
like,
could scar
you
as well.
Scar,
yeah. Yeah, you know it, the spot is a spot can cause an acne scar, but if you're going. If you're pushing deeper into the dermis to get it out, you're going to cause a deeper scar. Mm. And it's the scarring that, you know, it's not as much the
pus bit of it.
Yeah, it's more the propensity to scar. Mm. And we see that a lot in stressed females. Now, I'm the world's worst picker. You know, I'll put my hands up and when I had spots, I squeezed them. You know, hate anything on my face. But it's often, and maybe I'm the exact type of girl I'm talking about, the more anxious, you know, stressed type of person will pick and squeeze more.
No, but you're right, if I have a bad spot and I'm at it, then straight away you're like, you've just made it so much worse. You knew doing that.
You
was
knew
gonna
it.
Happen.
Yeah, you knew it. You still do it.
And we see that often in people with high levels of anxiety, they will pick more and they'll squeeze more as well. Even a very, you know, things that are barely even a spot. So that can happen as well, for sure.
So just to kind of wrap up, if anyone's listening and they are still unsure, like when they need to come, if someone's listening and they do have, it's frequent, it's like constant breakouts, who should think about going to a GP or a dermatologist?
So I think anyone who has evidence of scarring, you know, no question. People who have been on, you know, antibiotics for more than 6 months, and any time they come off the antibiotics, they flare again. You know, because antibiotics will never cure it. They can calm down flares, but if
but
they
I think
need
there's
them,
people who haven't even thought to get an antibiotic. I think there's people just thinking this is just a few spots.
Yeah,
Or waiting for it to go, as you said earlier.
Or waiting for it to go, and then I think you know the most important is if it's impacting on your confidence and your self image and your self esteem. If it's getting you down. Absolutely. And I think this is one of the things that you know, came through in one of the most recent studies, that actually it can be very different degrees of acne that affects people's confidence. And you can't, as you say, minimize just because one person, this amount is impacting the way they go about their life. That needs to be treated. You know, and I don't mean necessarily by Roaccutane, but whatever it takes. Yeah. You know, it's a medical condition, and it's
if you're
treatment.
Feeling shit or down about the way your skin looks, or you feel that nothing that you've tried so far is stopping it, there's something out there.
Someone,
go and talk to your GP or dermatologist. There's no excuse really to leave anything untreated because there's so much stuff that you can
exactly,
have.
And especially if it's been crumbling on for years. Like there is no reason that shouldn't be treated.
Okay, great stuff. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Claire.
Thanks for listening to the Dermatology SOS podcast. We really hope you enjoyed it. You can find us on Instagram and online at instituteofdermatologists.ie. See you soon.